Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a running podcast on warfarin, a wonder drug, a heart drug, to my friend in the United Kingdom who's come out of nowhere. I thought I'd have a few to chat to him. Now, one of the things is that it's good doing a podcast because people can elect not to listen to it. They might go in and go, oh, is it bad? If you write an email, it's just awful. Yeah, you write it and it's too long, it's not the right thing, and people misinterpret it. A podcast, they might want to listen to it, might not. They might put it in and listen as they're beeling around Pommyland. Now, I can't help but every time I watch Midsummer Murders, I think I half expect to see Terry, you drinking in the pub, as Barnaby does these various things, and we've got the CD versions of it, and we take the old Barnaby, and it's amazing how, you know, even if it's the same screen size, things just really date. Just the subtleties in the dress, but it's just so England, and so English. So when you're beetling around the place, and I always amused at the Terry versus the cops type of stuff. Going along here, that sort of overall story going back, and just sort of the beauty of a podcast is that you can listen to it. So, blood oath! Ha! Found something much more interesting to listen to. You know, the great thing is that you've got dial on the radio or whatever it is in your car or whatever you're doing. You can decide, I'm not going to listen to it. He's boring. You can do it. It's like this beautiful thing. It's like a track on a track that you listen to. And if you don't like it, you don't have to go, or you can listen to it or not. So I'm doing this podcast as I'm walking. And in a certain sense, there's sort of been a real landing on my feet in terms of it's sort of like this, you've been funded to do something as I get better, and the startup people have gone there and they haven't actually given you enough money. It's sort of like a startup without enough money, and you have to get A, mate. You got to get all your there's a good person on Glenbrook trying to stuff his bin full, and he's seeing a mad person with a shotgun microphone going forward. Yeah, so you can actually, when you get getting better, you can actually say, well, I've got to do this much cognitive, this much exercise, and this much productive work together, and I've got to organise it. And so what happens is that you say, oh, okay, on for the exercise, it might be good, but I'll actually podcast while walking, and then that leaves these problems. And eventually I've written software pretty much similar to the robotic station. It just takes the podcast and publishes it and puts that pretty annoying music at the end of it and all that tough crap. Now, it's pretty interesting. The picture they have on the front of the podcast is a picture. Well, I still had the double chin from the heart stuff. It's amazing how much that takes to go across. So it's beginning to just rain a little bit. And can I say it's fantastic? I enjoy raining. Now, it's been absolutely freezing, and it's pretty amazing here walking along. People have still got their Christmas lights out. So go figure what that means. It just means that the people here are as lazy as I am in terms of getting it up. I don't know why these people, you know, people about Christmas lights, and it's just bugger. I'll leave it alone all year. Okay, the story of warfarin. I'll do the dramatic invention of warfarin, and this is fictionalized because, you know, the actual story has been told by an official history, and who would believe that? It's much better to actually imagine it yourself, and it's great to imagine things yourself because you don't. I'm not constrained by having too many friends to talk with. So if you make something up, make something more fantastical, there's no one there to go, I'm not doing anything with him. He's made something up. So the story starts in Manitoba. That's one of those Canadian, of the British Dominion of Canada, it would have been. And this cowhand is told, you got to do two things. You got to take the horns of those steers, whatever they are, you know, your cattle. There's 12 cattle you've got to do. You got to dehorn them, and you've got to then get the hay for them for the winter, right, like this. And he says, all right, so I've got to take off the horns, then I've got to get the hay. And so he goes along, goes, what do I have to do? Oh, I can't remember. I have to do the hay something. I have to do something more. So he cut the hay first. And they came along and said, have you done the horns? And he goes, blow oath. He's an Aussie. In fact, all people in my rendition of history, all philosophers, all people, Churchill, Hitler, Stalin, they've all been Australian, unfortunately, because when I speak them, they speak with good old broad Australian accents, and when they're not actually doing their thing in uniform, they're out the back doing what most Aussies do, so clean up their barbecue, so muck around, fiddle with stuff, you know, waste time, watch footy, that type of stuff. Okay, so he said, blood oath. And he says, God, I've cut the hay. Let's put it over here. Now, meanwhile, at a microscopic level, these fundamental things with, I think it's chitin, they've got a new material on the outside of them, this new wonder material, which was going to make mushrooms, give you a bit of clue, but also the skin of insects, is this basically cellulose type material with an acid, sort of amino acid-y type of protein on the outside. It makes them super strong, and making it super strong, you can make these absolutely fine microscopic fibers with a huge, even though they're very small, the very fibers have this huge pressure. Just giving you a bit of science, mate. And that means that these fibres can actually shoot through any cell. It's all sort of these absolutely fine fibres, and these fine fibres can, because they're so fine, these nanofibres, they're nanometres across, they're the fungus fibres, and they can go in, and basically, once they start growing, they can actually grow through anything alive, any plant-like stuff, and just lance every cell. It's the surface area at the top is so small that as they grow, they create a huge pressure that no cell can withdraw, and so they lance everything, and then they are so small, so what they do is that they release digestive juices on the outside and just eat out the innards. Now, these digestive juices are great things. So essentially, if you go, not for me. Essentially, grapes, if you had a grape, right, and you irradiated it and killed all the funguses on it, it would taste like a grape. You go for all its thing. You actually need the fungus in it there, and this fungus digestive juice is all this. So this, the fungus basic metabolism produces the alcohol, but the taste, you're tasting fungus shit. That's your wine. I don't know if you really liked it. Is that that brewing, that this fungus, this way things, good old fungus shit. But with this hay, the fungus is going through, having a great old time, because some poor old Canadian cowhand who's got an Australian accent in memory has put this hay there, and he's got this 12 steers, and he says, "Ah, bugger that! I've forgotten my horn, the horners. I have to go back into Manitoba City, whatever that is. I don't know where the capital of Manitoba is, and get my shear horns." In the meantime, so the cows go, "What a wanker! Ah." Oh, he's left the hay out, and it's actually called silage for some reason, I don't know what that means, and they'll eat it. This has got a fine vintage, yum, oh, eat it all up, and this person is in the shit, and so he comes in there and says, "Come on, now, as I tell the story, people want me to name the various cows, and in general name the cows with male names, that's a female, and I say it's a fluid, gender is fluid," or they say, "But that's my name." So, oh, that's the name of everybody else, but I won't go through and naming the cows. So the cows are named Albert, Bruce, Chuck, Dean, Enoch, Fonzie, Garth, and they listen to it, and they tend to get distracted by it. Okay, so he knocks off one cow, and the cow walks out with blood, going, "Psh, oh, fuck, get out, get out." And then they do the next one, and the cows are just walking away, walking a short distance, and landing in a pool of blood as it's going down. Oh, what the crap going on? But he says, "Okay, well, look, the dead cow's there. There's two more to go. Let's do it up, and perhaps I'll be lucky." And he comes off, and there he has killed all his 12 cows. And then the boss comes along and says, "You killed my cows!" And the person, now this is where I've made it up a little bit. He says, "Shit!" And he gets on a quad bike. And this is obviously in the Great Depression, so they don't have quad bikes, but let's go. And he just booms off into the Canadian things, past the various bears and other things who are just sort of playing cards and stuff like that, and he gets his telephone up, dials up, and he phones all the way to Ottawa, and says, "Canadian Mounted Police, we always get our man." And he said, "I think I found the right place. Look, I have Joe Bruce, this bloody Australian out there. I've made him an official Australian because he's fucked up. So he's most probably been an Australian, and he's sort of walked his way into the place, not knowing about fungus, not knowing about this type of stuff." And so the Canadians go, "Okay, well, let's actually." Now, Ottawa's in Quebec. Oh, no, it's in Ontario. It's in Ontario, so that's a reasonable thing. I don't think the nation was put there. But at any rate, and so they send out the mounted police with their big mounted uniforms and red sting, and they eventually nab him. And they say, "No, this is Canada, and you would have thought the death penalty is in America, but the Americans has convinced us to have this death penalty. And of course, this is in this is big cow news, and I was trying to think. It was Wisconsin. Wisconsin's around there, so Wisconsin's this big American place. And for the benefit of the story, Wisconsin has got a lot of very rich farmers and basically no intellectuals, and they've got a university that they want, and they're all pretty Wisconsin-y, and they have got this the cow news. You know, this is big headlines. 12 cows get it. Australian is caught by mounted police, is about to be executed just as well. But they've got this Wisconsin people, and they want to they've got these people, and they've got these people who've gone to the Wisconsin University, and they can't get jobs anywhere, but they've got the alumni, and the alumni people have come through here have got buckets of money, and they say, we're going to have a research fund, and what we'd like you to do is, and they're whacking down the cow weekly, here is these cows, how do these cows die? And so they get their scientists, they've got heaps of money, let's find this out. And this poor Australian is on death row, about to be hung by these Mounties. Yeah, with it, they're going to sit him on a moose, whatever they do in Canada, and you get them trampled to death by a moose, something like that. And they're there, and they work away, and they work away, and they find this thing, which is they distill it, and what they do is they feed it to all their little pet animals, and all the pets die. And we will call this Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, WARF, Arin. It's a chemical bias. We'll call it warfarin. And it's got not much value in it, but here it's the room, and it's in the cow news, and they say, stop! And this person, the little Australian, gets away to go to some other part of history and create enormous chaos. Yeah, that's what Australians do. But we'll follow warfarin up. And so warfarin is used as this rat poison. Now, when they first use it as a rat poison, rat manners have not really advanced in a long, long time. And so when they kill one rat, so this local, I'll go with warfarin, and there's a rat plague here, and he sells it to one farmhouse cheap, and I'll be able to sell it to all the other farmhouses. But he goes along and killed all our rats, and then goes up to the next thing, and he says, oh, we had a problem with rats, it's suddenly stopped. And what happens is that when the rats die, it says, what's for tea, Mum? Well, I was just ratting about the place, and I found this dead, yum yum rats, and I'm not feeling all that well. I ate them all, and the rat sort of dies in front of the family, and they go, what's for dinner, Mum? Oh, what is for dinner is Mum, and they eat Mum, and then they run to there, and then of course it's warfarin, sort of like this wonder drug to rats. Of course, the rats are rats and not pretty sensible, and after a while they grow immune to it and they become suspicious, and warfarin's not the drug it used to be. But nonetheless, in World War II, the US are fighting in everywhere. They do a great job of fighting just to make war movies, and they have sandbags everywhere. And but the whole thing, if you're making something out of sandbags, it's all great. It all falls over because the rats have got into it, and there's lots of rats everywhere. So they've got this rat poison out here, and there's an American private who is absolutely pissed off. It's the end of World War II. What is to do? I'm so bloody depressed. Here they've given me all this rat poop. Oh, and just eats it like all crap. And says, oh shit, Sarge, I've eaten some rat poison. What are we going to do? And the Sarge goes up and they read the back. And it says, Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation rat poison. So I wouldn't be a warfarin. And I found out Wisconsin the people, and they say, oh, well, the way it actually operates is it interferes with the vitamin K, blah, blah, blah. You just get this big injection of vitamin K to your soldier, and they'll be rat. That's a freight train going through, which is okay. It's pretty depressing to see coal trains going through because you go, oh, there's a global warming express. Okay, so we're up here, and so the thing is that you've got a medicine and you've got a cure if some doctor accidentally prescribes too much, and in the world of litigation, that's a green light to go ahead. And so it's all okay, and the Americans go on, win World War II, so I'm going to say start the Vietnam War and start the Korean War, and there's Dwight Eisenhower, all his medals glowing, and, you know, Commander-in-Chief, and that, have you seen White Christmas with Bing Crosby? It's American soupiness thing about the Commander-in-Chief and the, you know, hail to the chief and all that type of stuff, and the Americans are going to be great and stuff like that. Oh my God, the president's got a heart condition, and the president says, "Well, I'm not going to do it." Dwight Eisenhower, when he wasn't speaking to the camera, was also an Australian. He says, "Ah, bloody hell! I'm only going to trust my bloody military doctors." And the military doctors say, I'll try this warfarin. We've tried it on one of your soldiers, General, and they try it on Dwight Eisenhower. Now, this is not the first person in office given warfarin, and they give it to him, and this is probably a little bit made up. It's Time Life magazine. Dwight Eisenhower eats rat poison, good enough for every American. And of course, warfarin and Wisconsin hit the headlines for the first time in history. And the rest is history. I might give a bit of a time to talk about. Now, meanwhile, across the other side of the planet, there's someone who is just had a good idea of the purge, a fear thing, and said, "Now, what's doing, Stalin? What's cooking? What's cooking, Stalin?" Stalin's also an Australian, even though he looks Russian. He's always been heard as speaking Russian. He's also an Australian, as in, indeed all people have been throughout history, from an Australian's viewpoint. And he says, "Going to have another purge." And they say, perhaps not. Here, have this lovely flavourless, you can't taste warfarin, have this large warfarin with your vodka, I suppose. And so he had huge amounts of warfarin. And warfarin being an anti-block thing, he had massive brain hemorrhages, which is sort of like warfarin. Yeah, that's what you get if you eat too much warfarin, brain hemorrhages. So this is one of the things that stops clots, stops strokes, but if you have too much, it's all over Red Rover. You know, sort of brain bleeds. And it's this very fine line. It's called a therapeutic window. And of course, I don't think when they were killing off Stalin, they were specky about it. Now, warfarin. So that's the story of warfarin, and it's become the sort of main, sort of like the major heart medication out there. So much so that I was, you know, ordering warfarin for the thing and getting people used to it. And you don't have a script here, you can have it anyway. It's sort of like, what are you going to do with it? Yeah, but yeah, this is an old script and stuff. I looked up and then I saw like the main shelf, the main go-to shelf of the chemist has warfarin on it. So that's the major, you know, like it's the, I'd like something beginning, that they'll give you warfarin, that they sort of, no, it's a heart medication beginning with X. Oh, that must be warfarin because W is X, closest to X, something like that. So it's really close. Now, how it works is rather great. So there's milk. Okay, let's start off with the milk. Half of milk is two proteins, casein and albumin. Now, the albumin is this white stuff which plasticizes. Casein also plasticizes, but this albumin is this material in blood. It's a major component of blood plasma and also of milk when you drink, because it's from an animal, and it's the white stuff in the froth of your cappuccino if you ever eat that type of stuff, albumin. And it's the whey. So the casein makes the cheese, and the whey, it's sort of a separation of it, and it's in your blood, and it's the main thing in your blood. And it's basically your little molecular suitcase. Molecules go into it, and so if you want to, and a hormone, something like that, you don't just, the hormones would just diffuse everywhere. It sort of goes, it's the main carrier of nutrient in your blood. And it's got this fantastic stuff that it sucks out sodium ions. It's got this huge desire for sodium ions, and then when it gets to the kidney, at various things, it can actually be this utility stuff. The kidneys suck out sodium ions and put it into your urine, so your urines are a little bit salty, but your blood is not at all salty. And so what that means is because your is it salty? Yeah. Because your there's is it salt or does it? Oh, I think it carries extra salt. I think your blood is extra salty, and so it's extra salty. I think it's actually got extra sodium ions in it, and so it's got this extra sodium in it. It's got these sulfur dibonds in it, holding it together to attract it there. So it's got this brilliant property of being salty, so it absorbs water. Now, what that means is that there's two things that your blood pressure is going around, pumping your blood around your body, but it means that the blood doesn't infuse water into everything. So essentially, if you take out the albumin, you take out the sodium, it would mean that you don't have this osmotic pressure. So this osmotic pressure means that you can pump the blood at a high pressure, but it's a liquid which doesn't, under high pressure, go everywhere. So it's got that fundamental aspect, this albumin. So albumin means the white stuff. So the egg white is this fundamental utility sort of blotting paper, and it sort of blots in the water. And so essentially, if your albumin's in balance, you leak water and you swell up. These old people, you know, with their kidneys don't work properly, so the albumin doesn't get primed up first. So this is the mechanism of it working. Now, alum obviously to be in its prime goes to the liver and gets things put in it, taken out of it. It's still like it's this go to. So your bloodstream very rarely dissolves something just in the liquid. It's dissolved into it. Now, the same true is for warfarin. So you got your warfarin is this four symmetry molecule. It's got your sort of methane in the centre, and it's got this four sections on it. And if you decide that I'm going to put one molecular group at one point, and on number two, you can put your next molecule on three or four and three, but vice versa. So there's two stereoisomers, the R and the S racematic ratio, and it so turns out that only one of those, one has a pretty much 100% effect on their liver, the other one has a 10% effect. So you've got the two warfarin, you've got to, so the amount of warfarin you have to make up, and they sort of make sure that the chemical process making it gives you the correct racematic ratio. So it goes into your stomach, gets absorbed by the blood very well, and transmitted directly. It's this molecule which goes straight into the albumin, and it goes straight into your liver. And when it goes into the liver, it stops the formation of vitamin K. Now, this is where my sort of memory banks go down. I can't really remember the actual chemical structure of vitamin K, but vitamin K is a vital thing for the building of clotting agents. And gee, I've really forgotten all about it. I'll have to research it, but I used to be able to give people a chemical tour of that one. And so that with that knocked out, you begin to bleed. So there's basically, depending on the individual, each individual has a warfarin versus bleed ratio curve. And that varies. So if you're an old person of 90, you have to take 1 milligram. If you've just had an operation and your heart and you're still bloated, and you're still pretty stuffed, you have to take 4. And then as you get fitter, you take a little bit more. So you have to actually track it. So I'm around 7, and there's a ultra fit SAS man from who's got strokes and down in anaconda. He's taking 8.5. So he's not necessarily, he doesn't look fit, but you can sort of see. So essentially, you have a range, and you try and pick something within that 2.5 to 3.5. And now, of course, the great thing is that sort of when the valve wasn't still in it, my blood was still getting toasted, and you know, that was bad. But the so I was still seeing the signs of the strokes with the warfarin, but still not getting the strokes. So they had a stroke scan before. Now the strokes dead tissue in your brain, and they can. Oh, I've forgotten what the name is. It's F something or other, a particular type of MRI scan, where they supersaturate the MRI image, which I could tell you about, and Oh, I don't know how this goes. What I'll do is I'll give you another one about spin and experiments that I'm doing. But they're super saturated. Flare. There you go. Now, all this is like all this I'm scooping out of memory, and this is the memory files, and I can sort of, I don't know, if people have, say, direct access to the memory, I have sort of like one, sort of like, it's almost like it's like doing a cryptic crossword 24 hours a day to get it. And look, I'm doing it. So it's this flare scan, and it's super saturated, so there's sort of like two pulses and a time width that they look at, and essentially they show up as these white little little white things, and so the precision is just jaw-dropping, sort of like it's eye-wateringly good. So it's sort of like it's got a fine precision, better than you could photograph it. You know, like better than you could, you know, if you took the brain out and you actually, you know, did, you know, cut it open, you just couldn't do it to it. So the warfarin's definitely stopped it. And then now the heart's good. I'm seeing very or really next to none, sort of like. So over a couple of months, I would say possibly see a tiny little one. I sort of write onto it, so sort of note it down, but then it's gone. So you can actually see the little strokes as a visual, also if they're going through a little visual thing. And the essential thing is also avoiding people stressing you. You definitely don't get it then. So that's the story of warfarin, and the reason I've taken so long to talk is that I've actually walking back now. I'm in a different house than I was in than I was when you saw we went to the past. I'll give you a little bit of a talk about that house next time. So see you, Terry. And again, if you listen this far, I don't know, you're not a fool, but yeah, there's no expectation for it. I'm just filling in as I'm walking, and just hopefully losing weight and getting fitter. And not really during these soft walks, they're just, you know, I think they're just basic maintenance. So see you, mate.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.